It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And happy Valentine's Day to you. It is the 14th day of February 2019, a commemoration of a martyrdom from 296 CE or something like that, that probably never actually happened because the early church was not known for being truth-telling. They just made up stories about people who got their heads cut off and the heads keep talking and what the hell ever. But that's, you know, that's the origin of Valentine's Day. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And that's where, among other things, you can find the podcast, the podcast feed. You can find the Twitter feed there. Hey, you can find the PayPal interface, and that's how we keep this little broadcast operation running. Yeah. And of course, there's a link there to the chat room. Click on the chat room link, and by Jove, you'll have an opportunity to pick out a screen name and a password. And then jump right in, where you will be met by House of Roberts and Squeaky. And, well, more will be wandering along presently, I presume. You'll also be moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a spacing guild master, has refrained from folding space today there in Northern California. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it's Valentine's Day, but I think at least in the United States of America, which is mostly where we celebrate Valentine's Day anyway, I mean, do they get all squishy about Valentine's Day in France or Italy or the UK or Sweden or Poland or Australia, Japan? I don't think so. But anyway, Valentine's Day has pretty much been shot to hell. Ooh, probably the wrong term. Ruined for this generation because of what happened a year ago today in Parkland, Florida, at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, namely the massacre of innocents at that public school. And if you've got a soul, if you've got a conscience, that's what you're thinking about today. Probably more than you know, candy hearts or anything like that. So, as the graphic posted in the chat room notes, Sparky put it up there. It has been 365 days since the Stoneman Douglas School massacre, and nothing has changed. I don't know how many days it's been since the slaughter at Sandy Hook, and nothing has changed. I don't know how many days it's been since the massacre at Virginia Tech, and nothing has changed. How many days since the slaughter at in Aurora, Colorado, nothing has changed. How many days since the mass shooting in Tucson, Arizona, and nothing has changed. And all thanks to the that good America-loving organization, the National Ruble Association, which was willing to take any amount of Russian cash and pass it through and funnel it along for the benefit of various and sundry American politicians, most of whom were Republicans, but not all of whom, and whose influence has helped to create the hell on earth that we have here today ongoing. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's a topic for conversation later. This is Conversation Radio, by the way, and the way that we keep the conversation going is, among other things, through our subscribers who help us knock down about a week's worth of the funding here at the Horn. And we have two subscribers for the 14th day of the month, and that would be a thanks going out to Ralphs and thanks going out to Matt in San Francisco. Thank you, Ralphs, and thank you, Matt, for being partial sponsors of the program and the and part of the reason this program has been on the air as long as it has been and so many others have not. You're why. You all are why. Now, as far as the week's funding is concerned, we've actually managed, thanks to everybody that chipped in yesterday, we managed to knock out the fundraising for one day this week. The fundraising goal as of this evening is $600, but it's Thursday, tomorrow's Friday, and I figure we may as well just say the fundraising goal is $800 to finish the week. And right now, as we speak, there are about, taken all together, there's about $1,000 worth of bills out there to be handled and to be taken care of, as soon as humanly possible. So knocking some of that that deficit out this evening would definitely be to the benefit of keeping all of this going. So that's that. Earlier today, I had a pretty good idea where this Thorn in the Side Thursday was going to go. Later in the afternoon, however, what was a bouquet of thorns became a straight-up bramble. It's so thorny that it's almost impossible, without very heavy gloves, to figure out anywhere you can pick it up without getting, thorned. So where? Where to begin? Well, there's pretty big news as of late this evening, but let's try to get some perspective around it and go back to earlier in the day. With the news that came out that indicated, among other things, that you remember the story about how Andrew McCabe floated the idea of wearing a wire. Well, he's got a book out now, and he's giving some greater detail. That was something he mentioned twice, two meetings, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and the idea that he was only kidding about wearing a wire for a meeting with Julius Geiser, the idea that that was a joke is, or some sort of beltway sarcasm, inside FBI humor, that's not holding a lot of water anymore. But what's more interesting to me, and I think based on the conversations that we have had here on the Horn, almost contemporaneously, I might add, is that back in something like May of 2017, Jesus, that feels like a long time ago. Back in May of 2017, according to Andrew McCabe, they actually had conversations about removing a mad president from office via the 25th Amendment. I'm sure if you are a longtime listener to the program, that you well recall the considerable amount of time that we have dedicated to conversations over what the 25th Amendment is and how it works, because it is not at all simple. The 25th Amendment process is, to say the very least, Byzantine. And it takes no small amount of parsing of language to figure out exactly how that would happen. But I'm kind of proud of what we do here at the Horn, because I dare say that our conversation was probably every bit as detailed as any conversation they had inside FBI headquarters. Because we went into the issue of how the 25th Amendment works granularly. One report that I read earlier today suggested that while the FBI would not have thought that there was anything the FBI could personally do in 25th Amendment terms, that they might have looked through the list of cabinet members wondering who might be a friendly as opposed to who might be not amenable to the conversation or not receptive to the idea of removing a president who was obviously and remains to this day obviously unfit to discharge the duties of the office of President of the United States of America. We had that conversation too, we really did. Wondering if maybe Rexon Tillerson or James Mattis, or perhaps even Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, might speak up for the rule of law over a president gone well round the bend. Now, of course, among other things, Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek has declared to "Well, I didn't know anything about it. I love Donald Trump. He's my daddy." And it's found that this is simply ridiculous. But the fact of the matter is, I imagine that conversation has taken place in more places than just the FBI. Because while inside the Beltway, Washington, D.C. is a skittish lot who are less than inclined to say things openly than they are to whisper sotto voce where they think that they're not being heard. I think even the Republicans know that he is crazier than a sprayed roach. It's inescapable. This isn't just someone with no regard for the norms of the office or the rule of law. This is a guy who is mentally, gravely, mentally ill. It, by the way, after weeks and weeks of wondering, it was so bad that Dick Cheney's cardiologist a couple of days ago accused the White House of hiding Julius Geezer's latest physical data. Dr. Jonathan Reiner, literally the cardiologist for Count Dicula, actually went on Twitter and said it's been 4 days since the president underwent his annual physical exam and still no data has been released. What are they hiding? because the only thing that had been released at that point was a statement last Friday, the 8th of February, that Donald Trump, our dear leader, is, quote, in very good health, and presidential quack Dr. Sean Conley, whom I would not trust to put a goddamn Band-Aid on without killing somebody, because he followed that up by, saying Donald Trump is in very good health by saying he will remain so for the duration of his presidency and beyond. Really? What makes me think that Jethreen Bodine, the press secretary, wrote that instead of Dr. Sean Conley? Because Dr. Sean Conley is not a prophet. He's a physician. But apparently thinks himself a doctor of prognosticology. No doctor can say that someone will remain in very good health for the duration of his presidency and beyond. That was fucking dictated. It makes me wonder if there really is a Dr. Sean Conley. Well, so that was last Friday. And now, after being tweaked by Count Dicula's cardiologist, they've finally released the results of the physical from last week, almost 2 weeks after the physical was performed. Because we're 10 days, 11 days. That's three short of 2 weeks. Ciphering, yay. And so a memo was released by the White House under the signature of Dr. Sean Conley, doctor of prognosticology, who said, after taking into account all the laboratory results, examinations, and specialist recommendations, it is my determination that the president remains in very good health overall. Among other things, what we know is that he weighs 243 pounds, up from the 239 of last year. The president of the United States is now officially obese. For his body mass index. Last year, Dr. Ronnie Candyman Jackson, otherwise known as his Adderall connection, said he needed to shed 10 or 15 pounds with more exercise and a better diet. This may seem trivial. It shouldn't. There have been mumblings that they're trying to get him to eat more fish and less steak, but he still likes a New York strip that's been reduced to its carboniferous essence and slathered in ketchup with a side of fried taters. And, of course, no one really had much to say about what happened to the leftovers after Clemson's visit for a cold hamburger at the White House. Dr. Conley did boost his rosuvastatin in an effort to get his LDL cholesterol down, because apparently they're not having any luck feeding him salmon. Have you noticed yet what's not in there? Now, this is the Reuters story, so there's a chance it's reasonably accurate. Yeah, there's a lot in there about what he eats and how much he weighs and what kind of statin drug he's taking. There's nothing in there about any analysis of his neurological status. Or whether any sort of battery of testing was done as to his orientation to, say, time and place. Because if that, you wouldn't want to know. Just know. Because if the president's mental status had been brought into the conversation, then that 25th Amendment conversation may have come out of the shadows. But if you're Caesar's physician, you don't talk about Caesar being mad, even if Caesar is running around the White House naked playing with himself. Because even if it's Julius Caesar, presidential physician still looks pretty damn good on a resume until you completely flush your credibility down the toilet. Brother Deacon Asa asking, is he a foot taller than last year? 2. 2. But he's got high cholesterol. I sympathize with that. I'm genetically predisposed to do that. I am a lipid factory. And I can tell you that there's... I take medication for triglycerides, and I take that very same statin drug. But you know what? There's one thing in this world that does more to lower triglycerides, in fact, than most drugs. And that's exercise. You don't have to necessarily get out there and work yourself into a foaming froth. It's good to do that, too, though, from time to time. Donald Trump doesn't do that. Donald Trump, in fact, just had a golf toy, a golf simulator installed in the White House. I think it's installed in the White House. We know it's installed somewhere. I don't think it's at Mar-a-Lago. But north of somewhere around $50,000, a golf toy. So that he doesn't even have to get out and breathe something resembling clean, fresh air. He can just hit imaginary golf balls with his imaginary golf club on an imaginary golf course in some darkened room. Now, is that something you do for somebody who's capable of getting 18 holes in? All golf jokes aside, Mark Twain called it, a good walk spoiled? Golf is exercise. It's really exercise if you walk the course. Because 18 holes of golf is a nice walk. And Darlene in Connecticut asks, the golf toy, was that at taxpayer expense? Probably. Yeah, I know. He doesn't spend his own money because he doesn't have any. If you walked up to Donald Trump and he out on the street and said, "Hey, bub, let's go for a snack. We'll split the bill." He couldn't walk down Pennsylvania Avenue to the Elephant and Castle and sit down to a plate, because they got really good pretzels. Hot, wonderful, beer-based ground mustard to go. Yeah, he couldn't split the bill with you. I mean, we're talking about $8. That skeevy bastard probably doesn't have $4 in his pocket. That's not at all shocking, because that's often the case with the uber wealthy. But he is typical in that regard. But golf, I mean, you depending, like around here, I'm not talking about a place like Florida where if you drop a marble, the marble doesn't move. You play golf around here, you're not walking, you're hiking. And you will come into the 19th hole having worked up a sweat, especially if you're schlepping your own bag. But even if you're not. And then, you know, swinging the sticks anywhere from 80 to 122, I didn't say that, 122 times, that's some exertion too. I mean, I'm not allowed to play golf anymore because the torquing motion of swinging the golf club might make my spleen go pop, because I'm part of the great American uninsured. Can't do anything about it. I wish I could, because I'd kind of like to play. It's a fun game. Once you get to the zen part where, you know, you're not breaking clubs or throwing them into the water hazard anymore. People do that. I saw him swinging a golf club the other day, and wow, what an old man swing he has. But that be that as it may. I'm confident that the report of his health is more notorious for what's not in it than what is. Do you wonder, asks Ron in Raleigh, when was the last time Dolt 45 actually broke a real healthy sweat? I can't see him doing that in the last 30 years. Maybe Stormy had him breathing hard and grunting. I'm guessing she was on top. So, you know, well, there's... Now, damn it, see what happens? There I was talking last night about the fact that I don't spend much time at all. I try not to spend any time at all thinking about other people's sex lives. And damn it, Ron... You come along and you make me... Oh, now I feel all ucky. Yeah. Well, thank you, Monique. Monique says happy Valentine's Day to the lovely Ms. Agnes and you. Thank you very kindly. Ms. Agnes is in the next room. I told her if she did not lie down that I would get the Thorazine dart out. Because it's difficult to get the... You got to let things heal. You can't just be up doing stuff all the time. Yeah. So back to things that ruined or, well, it didn't ruin, but sort of rewrote my program notes for me. Let's check in. With a clip from CNN from earlier in the day.
This goes. Does that just then hit pause on this whole national emergency? Is that how it would work?
And that's a great question. That would depend on whether a judge would issue a stay in the case. The president certainly is not going to stop just because a lawsuit is filed. He would only stop spending the money if a court told him to stop. And certainly one
and
of
maybe
the
not even
requests
then.
From the plaintiffs, whoever those plaintiffs turn out to be, and there will certainly be a lot of them, will be for some sort of injunction for the money not to be spent. But that's a decision for the judge, and the injunction could likely be appealed to an appeals court and then probably to the Supreme Court. So every step in the legal process will be highly contested. But one thing I think we can safely assume is that the president and thus the administration will not hit pause on spending this money unless a court tells it to hit pause.
That, of course, is all Jeffrey Toobin. In the background, there's video running of floor speeches being taken in the Senate.
And that will be one of the contested issues.
This moment when Mitch McConnell interrupted Republican Senator Chuck Grassley on the floor. Watch.
Yeah. So cranky old Chuck Grassley was delivering some speech probably about the glorious nature of the butter sculptures in Iowa or something equally meaningless. My old Kentucky homie, Mitch McConnell, the man who poses in front of the Confederate battle flag and grins while so doing, interrupted him.
Allowing these tax credits, incentives to lapse, has created uncertainty for investors and the industry about the availability of these
credits. Would the senator yield?
Jeopardizing the long-term investments necessary for the development of these biofuels. I hope the next time I get a chance to have the floor, I won't be interrupted. I yield the floor and put the rest of my statement in the record.
Both Republicans not exactly seeing eye to eye there.
Yeah.
He was actually, to be fair, talking about the biofuels tax credit, which means a lot to the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing Republican farmers and agri-corporations back in Iowa, who raise a lot of corn to have it turned into alcohol because we call that biofuel. But it wouldn't wait. Chinless Mitch had to have the floor in order to make clear to an audience of one just exactly how obsequious he could be. Because the reason for interrupting Chuck Grassley was for the purpose of announcing that the president had said he would sign the bipartisan agreement that kept the government open, but that at the same time he did that, he was going to declare a national emergency so as to build his godforsaken, dumbass, idiotic wall, or fence, or barrier, or peaches, or whatever we're calling it these days, as the very stable genius once said. It wasn't long ago that I heard some inane palaver on my filthy little habit in the morning, in which one Joe Scarborough and some other people around him declared that Mitch McConnell really knows how the Senate works and he's going to protect the institution of the Senate. Now, this, of course, flies in the face of objective reality. But what do you want from a guy who didn't know that the first 10 out of 12 presidents of the United States were slavers? Oh, well. So the way it shook out was this. The House is over there waiting to take its vote one way or the other, and presumably a vote to keep the government running. It's what Nancy Pelosi promised she would do after outmaneuvering Donald Trump to the point that he was lucky to be wearing socks. But over in the Senate, Mitch McConnell would not announce Senate action on their part of the continuing resolution until such time as Donald J. Trump, who is not a member of the legislative branch of government, which is Article 1, but is instead a part of the executive branch, which is Article 2, gave him permission to do his Article 1 work, him being Chinless Mitch McConnell. And so, craven and cowardly, Mitch McConnell then had to promise that he, Mitch McConnell, would support a declaration of national emergency in exchange for Donald Trump not fucking 800,000-plus Americans some more like he did for damn near a month. In case you're wondering, this is what it looks like when civil society begins to go to pieces. And so Chinless Mitch had to get down on the ground and grovel like the worm he is and kiss Donald Trump's hairy toe and promise to support the single most stupid project ever undertaken in the entire history of the United States of America. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer were ready. Of course, I consider Nancy Pelosi the brains of that outfit. And pointed out the fact that Donald Trump's emergency declaration would be a non-emergency emergency. And that if he really wanted to consider national emergencies, he might want to consider what anniversary this is, she said, referring to the massacre of innocents at Parkland, brought to you by the National Ruble Association. Second Amendment, comrades. And so I think that is okay. Randy in PA says, I'm not getting this and missed the evening news. Can you make it simpler to understand? All right, let me try. The House and the Senate have agreed upon a package to keep the government open. Donald Trump demanded $5 billion, and they offered him less than that. And this time through, they're offering him even less. These negotiations were entered into in good faith. And there's a bunch of other money in there that does other things besides put up a spite fence. That's what we call them here in Appalachia, spite fence. It's when you put up a fence between two pieces of property where the only purpose is to be shitty to your neighbor. It's a $333 billion continuing resolution. And it puts off any further government shutdowns until October, when the rest of the government shuts down too. So when we come up to that brink, it won't be 800,000 jobs. It'll be the whole damn government. But there's a lot of other border stuff. Things for ports of entry, things for making sure that, you know, truckloads of meth and fentanyl and shit don't come through the ports of entry. Gosh, there'll be 1,200 new Border Patrol officers. Well, we need that like a tank needs tits. there will be some limits on the number of people that ICE can put in its concentration camps. The federal pay freeze will be reversed. There will be a little bit more money for the census. And so the idea was that the House agreed, the House Democrats agreed, the Senate agreed. Nobody was happy. That meant that there was a decent chance that it was a fairly meaningful compromise. And then the president would sign the bill and keep the government open. And because he could not negotiate, or let alone strategize his way out of a sopping wet paper bag with a hole the size of a goddamn basketball in it, he got himself cornered, which then in turn led to people like that life support system for a hairdo, the Hannity job, and Anthrax Coulter, and some of the other, you know, Mark Levin and the rest of the weirdos, to have a big sad because their God Emperor hero was not going to get to be as shitty to the brown people as they wanted him to be able to be. But instead of simply going forward, Pelosi with her house and McConnell with his, McConnell had to go to the White House. I mean, I think it actually happened on the phone. But he had to declare his undying devotion to Donald J. Trump and probably tell Trump that he shits ice cream and I don't know, burps champagne bubbles. And promise that, okay, we're going to pass this, and all the bajillion dollars you want to throw down the shitter for your stupid goddamn wall. I promise I'll sit idly by while you declare a national emergency and try to seize power from my branch of government. You know, because Mitch McConnell is a brilliant strategist. So that's where we are. The Senate and the House will take up these resolutions. Presumably, they will pass them. It will go to the White House, and at that point in time, Julius Geezer will sign the bill and also sign a declaration of national emergency, which gives him a host of terrifying powers. And I try never to go down the Alex Jones road into the realm of pure, untrammeled paranoia. But it's hard to avoid in this particular instance. Do you remember? Some of us do. A beautiful, bright blue September morning in 2001, when, as we had our morning coffees, as the day was barely even breaking in the Pacific time zone, a couple of planes slammed into a building, a pair of buildings, really tall buildings in New York City. And 3,000 plus people died, and more are still dying from the lingering after effects of breathing all that poisonous dust. Hi, Appalachia. And within a day, George W. Bush was demanding that Richard Clark go and gin him up some evidence that Saddam Hussein, he tried to kill my daddy, was behind the September 11th attacks. Remember that? Because I do. I know you do too. And then they decided to take military action, on a limited basis, of course, against the country that had hosted the people who were said to have actually done it, not not some other country. And so by, another month or so later, we were dropping bombs on Afghanistan, even though Dick Cheney said that there was nothing there worth, Donald Rumsfeld who said that there was nothing there worth bombing. And then the next thing you know, we were off on a mad rush to war. And there was something called an AUMF that went through Congress the way that, the way that milk of magnesia goes through people. The Authorization for Use of Military Force. And the next thing we knew, we were attacking the innocent people of Iraq who hadn't lifted a finger against us and proceeded, on the order of George W. Bush, to slaughter something around 1 million non-combatant Iraqi civilians. But if you think that that's unfair, because I'm just talking about another Republican, we can always talk about the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, in which, yes, again, the government of the United States of America in the late 1960s, or in the 1960s, ginned up a fake event to give them a reason to get their war on against the people of Vietnam, who, again, really hadn't done anything to the United States of America. But the Gulf of Tonkin resolution resulted in a still mounting number of deaths, somewhere north of 55,000 people. American military personnel. I'm not talking about the 2 million civilians that we killed. And so what I got to thinking about with regard to, and understand, there are mechanisms inside the national emergency law, which should never have been put in place in the first. This is a case of, the National Emergency Act was a solution looking for a problem. It's a child of the Cold War, and this notion that took hold of Congress back in the 70s that somehow or another, if the Ruskies dropped the begging, that we wouldn't be able to respond because our Constitution is so clunky and is designed to run so inefficiently. There's truth in that. This is not a governmental system that is meant to run smoothly and rapidly in the case of emergency. When Abraham Lincoln was confronted with a rebellion by the slave states, or most of the slave states, not talking about Maryland or Kentucky or Missouri, he had to get all kinds of extra constitutional. There's nothing in the Constitution that says he can raise an army, but he did. He suspended habeas corpus on the sketchiest of grounds. Because if he hadn't, there's every likelihood that Confederate armies would have been marching down Pennsylvania Avenue. So back in the 70s, the National Emergency Powers were created. And it was predicated on a declaration of national emergency by the President of the United States. Like, say, a couple of Ruski nukes going kaboom somewhere in the United States, or Hell, a national emergency doesn't have to be war. Let's say the Yellowstone supervolcano went off and devastated 8 or 10 or 12 states and created a massive refugee crisis, and that would be an appropriate use of the National Emergency Act. Or let's say that in the space of a year, 3,000 people had been killed for one reason and one reason only. That might support it. A non-emergency does not constitute a national emergency. But here in the next day or so, Donald J. Trump is going to sign a national emergency declaration stating that the United States has a national emergency based upon the activities of desperate migrants fleeing desperate circumstances, trying to come to a country that they know already despises them, in large part, but in which they have little or no choice. That's the emergency. Illegal border crossings down, illegal immigration down. But several years ago, Roger Stone told Donald Trump that he should talk about building a wall. Stone said that to him because he wanted to create an he knew he was dealing with a mental hobbit. And so he had to come up with some way to get Trump to remember to hate the brown people so that his voters would get excited because he was empowering them, or his followers would get excited because he was empowering them to hate the brown people too, which is something they had really, really badly been wanting to do, but hadn't been able to give full voice to because people were still a little teeny tiny bit decent in this country. And so along the way, we've gotten people like Steve King declaring that Mexican drug mules were carrying bales of drugs across the border, and that they had calves like cantaloupes. As an aside, I often wonder where people's inspiration comes from. And there's an ad running now for, I think, Liberty Mutual Insurance. Those are the ads that have people standing in front of at a waterfront with the Statue of Liberty in the background. And there's a guy who comes in talking about how he likes to keep in shape and training, and he likes to, and he's pushing a bicycle, and he's got some little tight bike pants on and a little yellow bike jersey. And then the camera pans back, and he's got these enormous, abnormally shaped calves. And just because of the way my mind works, I immediately thought of Steve King talking about the Mexican drug mules with calves the size of cantaloupes. And I wonder if the guy who came up with that ad was making a subtle, or perhaps not so subtle, it worked on me, reference to the racist remarks of America's best-known Republican white supremacist, who is, oddly enough, still allowed to be in the Congress of the United States. That's, like I said, that's just an aside. So that's where we find ourselves. All right, I'm sorry, Lee. Subject line, mental hobbit. Stop it, Bob. Don't go hating on hobbits. I know, but if I'd said mental midget, I would have gotten an email from somebody saying don't, right. Every program has its own conundrums each and every evening. So the question, so the mechanism of the national emergency is that if the president declares one and the Congress disagrees, they can put it to a vote. And I would be surprised if the House of Representatives does not resoundingly declare its opposition to the national emergency. But here's where it gets dicey. Trump can't take another defeat. And make no mistake, he's been getting owned by Nancy Pelosi. And to a certain extent, so too has Mitch McConnell. Mitch's grasp on power might not be as firm as we would be led to believe. And this is all speculation, I realize, but it's also sort of considering how the process works. If the House passes a resolution disapproving or objecting to the declaration of national emergency, it goes to the Senate. What did it mean when Chinless Mitch promised Donald Trump that he would support the national emergency declaration? Well, here's one thing I think it means. It means that Chinless Mitch will not let the Senate vote on the House's resolution of disapproval. Just flat won't let it happen. The only thing that might overcome that is if there was a sufficient palace coup to garner about, 21 Republican senators who said, screw it, we're voting with the Democrats on this one. Well, most of the Democrats, because remember, Joe Manchin will probably vote in favor of the national emergency resolution or declaration. Because it could be disastrous if the House and Senate voted against it. It would then have to go to the president's desk where he would veto it, which would then offer both House and Senate an opportunity to come up with a two-thirds majority and override his veto and take his national emergency declaration away from him. If he then tried to go forward, he would be in impeachment territory. So when my old Kentucky homie Mitch McConnell kissed the ring, what he was probably promising was not to let it even come to a vote. Yeah, that's not democracy, is it? That's not even remotely democratic. Little d, not big D. God, I'm so old I can remember when Bill the Cat Killer Frist, then Senate Majority Leader, would stand in the well of the Senate and say, all we want is a up or down vote. Yeah. So the question then becomes, where are we? Well, those are all things that can happen after the thing is declared. The other thing that can happen is that lawsuits can be filed. Donald Trump does not give a good goddamn about lawsuits because Donald Trump does not give a good goddamn about the Constitution of the United States, legal process, rule of law, any of that. So as I was pondering this afternoon, a couple of things became obvious to me. The first thing that became obvious to me is that the National Emergency Declaration could very well be an impeachable offense in and of itself, sui generis, standing alone. No 6 months of hearings. No endless trail of witnesses. No jillions of dollars spent producing semi-pornographic reports about a presidential cleanness. But the act itself standing as the grounds for impeachment. Because, again, the National Emergency Act presupposes a national emergency. The president would violate the National Emergency Act if, let's say, and let's paint broadly here, because sometimes the ridiculous examples point out how ridiculous the reality is. Let's say Donnie is playing in the dark with his fake golf clubs on his fake golf course with his fake golf ball, and he shanks his tee shot through the windows of his fake golf resort and has a hissy. And let's say because he does that, he then declares a national emergency. A national cyber golf emergency. No one in their right mind would think that constituted a national emergency. Unfortunately, we have a lot of Republicans in this country who would bend themselves into psychotic pretzels trying to explain how the president getting a game over was really a national emergency. Clearly, it interferes with his ability to execute the duties of his office. Therefore, we must do something. I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. That's how they are. So you can see the scope and nature of the mess. But if he did something that stupid about something and declared a national emergency over something that was obviously nothing but a product of the mad shrieking of the spirochetes screaming each to each in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between his ears and pass for septuagenarian brains, it would be clear that he had violated the law. Because to declare a national emergency out of something that isn't a national emergency is to violate the very essence of the law itself. Now, there are, I read through it, and I didn't see any penalties or anything, you know, if the president, blah, blah, blah. But legal, but the silence of a statute is not necessarily the statute saying that something can't happen. Because, again, remember the rules of primacy that we have in regard to the Constitution. If an official act or a piece of legislation is offensive to some principle of the Constitution of the United States, then that act becomes unconstitutional, or that piece of legislation becomes unconstitutional. If a president behaves unconstitutionally, intentionally and deliberately, that president is engaging in what the framers described as high crimes and misdemeanors. If the president engages in high crimes and misdemeanors, it then becomes the duty of the House of Representatives to take up a bill of impeachment charging the commission of those high crimes and misdemeanors. You still with me? I mean, I know you are. This is probably the sharpest radio community in the country, alongside the truth seekers. So I wonder if it might be good from a preemptive standpoint for Nancy Pelosi to simply say, well, Donald Trump apparently has his national emergency sign-in crayon out. I have my bill of impeachment signing pen out. He signs the national emergency. We're going to pass a one-count bill of impeachment and send it to the Senate. And not that I'm trying to toot my own horn. See what I did there? But it might be a really smart piece of strategy. One, it might scare him shitless, because among other things, we've had reports over the last couple of weeks that he has spent a great deal of time trying to curry favor with Republican senators to convince them to vote against any bill of impeachment that comes out against him, because he knows he's going to be impeached. How about that? The other part of it is, a bill of impeachment, a one-count bill of impeachment sent to the Senate of the United States would put Chinless Mitch in one painful corner. And anything that runs Chinless Mitch's blood pressure up a couple of hundred points is okay by me. And then we would find out of something that I said a long time ago, you know, back when I had the tattered purple robe with the appliqued moons and stars on it, and Will Thee Kiss Me in the Dark Baby written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front of it, and had my Magic 8-Ball out with the busted screen that says, answer hazy, ask again later. Back when I predicted that a bill of impeachment sent from the House to the Senate would not even receive a hearing, because Chinless Mitch would not let it come to a hearing, we might actually find that out to be factual. And it might, and let's also remember, when we talk about impeachment, because people get lost in this so easily, Madison and Hamilton make no bones about the fact, they state it directly, that impeachment is not to be considered a criminal process, but rather is a political one. That was kind of the underpinnings of the great 1990s cleanness hunt. The Republicans felt like they could do it because impeachment is a political process, not a legal one. And while it is not illegal to have consensual sex, it can be deemed to be politically a high crime and or misdemeanor. Especially if one then lies about that consensual sex, or asks what the definition of is. And so we could potentially have, and it's sad, but I don't think, as much as I respect her use of power politics, I don't think Nancy Pelosi would do something this tough, this in-your-face. It might be the best thing that ever happened to the United States, at least in this century, because it might finally put the brakes on runaway presidential power as exercised by the two presidents who did not win the popular vote, but instead had the presidency awarded to them by operation of an anachronism from America's days of being a slave-holding country, namely the Electoral College. And one last thing in this regard. And again, it's not something we're prone to thinking about. But the impeachment clause of the Constitution of the United States doesn't say a blessed word about how many times you can impeach a president. It's open-ended. There's no one impeachment only rule. And please remember that at the time the Constitution was drafted, there was also no limitation on the number of terms that a president could serve. And so, in theory, at the time that they were contemplating it, a president could be in his fifth term, and yes, they were talking about his's. It was an unspeakable horror to those old white men that women would ever get the vote. But a president could be in his fifth term and might have been impeached two or three or four times. And maybe it didn't work out in the Senate. But if the House jumped out and impeached him over this, especially if Chinless Mitch refuses to let a House resolution condemning the declaration of national emergency be considered in the Senate, and then forced him to quash a bill of impeachment to keep it from being tried in the Senate, that would be so violative of every norm considered within the Constitution that it might shine a light on the overt corruption of the Republican Party. Or it could, as I mentioned, start a palace coup inside of the Republican Party, particularly in the Senate and against Mitch McConnell. This is some serious 11D-dimensional chess, I confess. One more consideration of the Declaration of National Emergency. And this goes back to when we started out bombing Afghanistan, but Rumsfeld didn't think that was any fun, and he thought it would be ever so much more exciting to reduce Baghdad to rubble. They took a casus belli related to the attacks of September 11th and then ran a smoke and mirrors con job on the American people that was so successful that you actually had a significant plurality, if not a majority of the country, thinking that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11. I remember it. I'm sure you do too. Well, play that into the present and the near future. He declares a national national emergency on the American-Mexican border because of the waves of migrants, the caravans, and the drugs, and the Mexican rapists, and you know. And I presume you have probably seen this, but if you haven't, it's worth considering. Starting the day after Nicolas Maduro was reelected in Venezuela. And according to McClatchy newspapers reporting, well, McClatchy says that Venezuelan authorities have recently seized 19 assault weapons, 118 ammunition cartridges, and 90 military-grade radio antennas aboard a U.S.-owned plane that had flown from Miami into Valencia, Venezuela. That's the third largest city in that country. It was a Boeing 767. The owner of the Boeing 767 is a company with a kind of a generic sounding name. They call themselves 21 Air. I guess because the cat was already out of the bag on calling it Air America. That particular plane has run 40 round trips between Miami and various locations in Venezuela and Colombia since January the 11th. I'm pretty sure that the one instance was not the only one where they were running guns. Now, we haven't made any bones about wanting to do us some regime change in Venezuela. The other thing, though, and I mentioned this on last night's program, is that the Democrats in the House have also not made any bones about their unwillingness to countenance or participate in or grant a war powers resolution to the madman in the White House. Now, what does that make you think? Tell you what it made me think. It made me think that if he wants to, he'll declare the national emergency on the border and then declare that hordes of Venezuelan commies are busily hiking through the snake and spider infested jungles of Colombia and Panama, Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala, and they're on the way to America in the guise of a group of women and children. You think that's crazy? Does that sound crazy to you? I just happen to be so damned old that I can remember when the Reagan administration declared that the Sandinistas were going to invade the United States if we did not violate the Boland Amendment and illegally run guns and money to the Nicaraguan Contras. Everything old is new again. And that seems like the kind of sleazy, filthy package deal that the likes of, Stephen Miller, and more importantly, Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, you know, he graduated first in his class at West Point. And John Pornstash Bolton and Elliot ought to be in The Hague in a cell by himself, Abrams, would come up with. Like I said a little bit ago, I don't run around looking for reasons to get all Alex Jones, but we're not talking here about monkey jellyfish hybrids that were purchased in the bazaars of Hong Kong. We're talking about a Republican administration doing the same kind of illegal shit that Republican administrations have been doing since Christ was a corporal in the army of God. I don't know if I don't know if there's any stopping them. But I know that the Constitution grants us some remedies in regard to a runaway, lawless chief executive. And I know that they will not stop him unless they are you. Apparently, the FBI came to the same conclusions we did here when we analyzed the 25th Amendment, and that is that until such time as it became politically beneficial to him, Mike Pence would never sign a 25th Amendment letter. But I would find it a lot more comforting if Nancy Pelosi would take a genuinely iron, immovable stance against this usurpation of power, because it is a usurpation. The National Emergencies Act was not passed as a binky for a 72-year-old toddler president, man-baby president, having a hissy. It was meant to deal with genuine emergencies. And anywhere you look along the southern border, there are no places that look like, the trailer to World War Z. Well, that too. Ron in Raleigh says, did you say Iran? They're about to run the same play on Iran and Cuba. These bastards are really itching to start some shit. You heard Mike Pence's saber rattling against Iran today. A pro-Guaido journalist on national propaganda radio stated that Cuban agents are spying on general officers in the Venezuelan army and kidnapping and torturing them to keep them in line. Can you say two-front war? I can say, I don't think we're ready for it. Hell, we couldn't whiff a rock. Meanwhile, David in South Carolina Stan points out, Cuba says the U.S. is moving special forces and preparing Venezuelan intervention. Wouldn't surprise me in the least. Try to keep up, Bob, says Irish Dave. The new marketing terms are Trumper tantrum and Lindsay fit. Well, I will make a note of it. Those are two Jim Dandies. Irish Dave also adds, why do you suppose that no one has questioned the misappropriation of the emergency appropriation of $900 million for the ongoing attack on Afghanistan? Of course, there's the precedent of stealing TOW missiles from the Pentagon and delivering them to the Israeli fence for selling to Iran as hostage ransom, but still. Because that's the other part of the National Emergency Declaration. He thinks he's going to be able to take money from, say, wildfire recovery in Florida and money from hurricane recovery in Puerto Rico and use it to build his wall and at the same time punish people for having the unmitigated temerity of not voting for him. We are rapidly approaching a point wherein, if we do not act affirmatively to stop him by constitutional means, there will not very much longer be a constitution to use to try to stop him. Lee in New York says, we already have a simple public example for impeachment that's existed for 2 years. The orangutan has attacked the First Amendment instead of supporting and defending it. His plentiful use of the term fake news attacks the only protected profession. The silence is deafening. Democrats have ignored it. Well, I mean, if they've ignored it, Lee, they've ignored it since the first week of January. They were powerless to do anything before. They are no longer powerless. Flavio says, you and I are as old as dirt. I remember. That was the speech where Reagan said the Contras were the moral equivalent of the Founding Fathers, Mommy, with a map of Brazil, all of South and Central America, red in the background. Yeah, the geographic thing just crawls all over me. I was actually in, don't hate me, I was in McDonald's earlier today, breakfast time. For my money, it's the best cup of the sort of generic decaf, and there aren't many of them that's out there. Better by far than Starbucks, even, for just plain old decaf. And they'd remodeled my local McDonald's, and now it's all airy and open and looks like it was designed by a stock boy from IKEA. And they've got little automated kiosks there where you can order without a human being. But they had a sign up talking about how sustainably and responsibly sourced their coffee beans are. And the sign, and it's like the spread of a disease, because I went through this with the Green Mountain coffee ads that drove me crazy. They've got a sign that says, our coffees come primarily from El Salvador, Guatemala, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, Colombia, and Brazil, and Sumatra. The graphic representation they had on the poster saying all this showed, in fact, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Colombia, and Brazil. And I'd left my phone in the car, so I didn't get to take a picture of it. But I found myself saying, God damn it, where's Sumatra? You know, Sumatra, South America. You go to Montevideo and turn right or left or something. Sumatra. It's in Africa, isn't it? I think it is. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's in Canada. Because I couldn't see it anywhere there on South America where they were talking about Sumatra. Or Central America. Damnedest thing. So I've actually filibobstered, surprisingly, not really, the first half of the program away. We started with an $800 fundraising goal to end the week, $600 for tonight, and we remain right there. $800 to finish the week, $600 to come even for the night. And we got a couple of folks on hold, but I blew past the Green News Report last Tuesday, and I felt bad for it, and I'm not going to do it again. So we'll go to the Green News Report, see what Brad and Desi are up to, and maybe, just maybe, God, it would be wonderful if we could, because I hate sitting around and sweating stuff. And maybe we'll take a bite out of the $800. That would be wonderful if folks wanted to do that. If you're able, don't hurt yourself. And if at all possible, and don't wait for somebody to be first. I wish I had a challenge to put on the table, but I don't. But it doesn't mean we don't have to do this, because we can't run a radio program on love and good wishes, for which I have a lot of the entire community and the operation itself. But you know what I mean. If you want to help out, there's a contribute tab at headon.live. If you want to become a subscriber and join Ralphs and Matt as a subscriber for the 14th of the month, that's cool too. But let's check out the Green News. I'll be right here.
It's Thursday, February 14, 2019.
Living this green dream is actually a national nightmare.
Republicans move quickly to demonize the Green New Deal.
The world is truly under threat, scientists say, from a catastrophic collapse of nature's ecosystems.
New study warns insects are declining at an alarming rate. Massive public lands bill passes in the Senate. Plus,
this is the beginning of the end of natural gas at the Los Angeles Department for Water and Power.
Los Angeles ditches natural gas for electricity.
Really? All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I really don't like their policy of taking away your car, of taking away your airplane flights. You're not allowed to own cows anymore.
Wow, he must have read a different Green New Deal than I did. Either that, or he's an incredible, unrepentant liar. I wonder which one it is. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, man, these right-wingers are really flipping out about the Green New Deal for some reason.
Oh, yes, they are. The Green New Deal, that sweeping joint resolution to tackle climate change and create millions of jobs that was proposed by Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of
New
York.
And it's only a resolution. It's not even legislation.
Indeed.
Press on.
They proposed it last week. It is having an impact. Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on Tuesday said he plans to bring the Green New Deal resolution up for a vote.
Good.
We'll give everybody an opportunity to go on record and see how they feel about the Green New Deal.
Wait, I thought that he would only bring up things for a vote in the Senate if the president would sign them.
Republicans are intentionally misleading the public with a flood of false talking points attacking a retracted draft document that was erroneously posted by Ocasio-Cortez's office. It contained language that is not in the official resolution. Fox News, right-wing media, and dark money groups are already spreading it all around. Republican Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming flat out lied about it on the Senate floor this week.
There's another victim of the Green New Deal. It's ice cream. Livestock will be banned. Say goodbye to dairy, to beef, to family farms, to ranches. American favorites like cheeseburgers and a milkshake will become a thing of the past.
Whatever.
And of course, that is all a lie. So the messaging battle is on in advance of the 2020 election. However, new polling does show that millennials so far support the Green New Deal by a 30-point margin over their older cohorts.
Well, that's only because the right-wing slime machine has yet to really get underway. I hope the Democrats have a plan to answer that false message with the truth.
But there was a rare bit of good news out of the Senate. This week, the Senate overwhelmingly passed a sweeping public lands bill. It will permanently authorize the popular Land and Water Conservation Fund, designate more than 1 million acres of federal land as protected wilderness, and expand a handful of national parks and monuments.
Cool.
It's likely to pass the House, but it's still unclear if Trump will sign it. Meanwhile, a disturbing new study warns that insects are in serious decline because of humans, and at the current rate, could go extinct within a century, threatening, quote, a catastrophic collapse of nature's ecosystems.
Which insects?
All of them.
All insects?
All of them. The first ever global scientific review of research found that globally, more than 40% of all insect species are in decline, with a rate of extinction 8 times faster than that of mammals, birds, and reptiles. The primary driver of the decline is intensive agriculture, particularly the heavy use of pesticides, along with habitat loss and climate change.
Well, I hate insects. They bite me all the time. Why should I be concerned about this?
They are required for your food supply.
Well, I don't eat insects.
They're part of the food web and therefore required for the food that you eat.
Okay. I hear they're banning cows and ice cream anyway, so what do I care?
In California, new Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom announced he is scaling back a voter-approved high-speed rail project between San Francisco and Los Angeles due to massive cost overruns. A segment already under construction in the state's Central Valley will be completed, and he left the door open to a full statewide high-speed rail project in the future. But it's a setback that underscores the difficulty of building transformative infrastructure projects like high-speed rail. And finally, some good news. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti announced this week that the nation's second largest city is phasing out natural gas, canceling plans to spend billions of dollars rebuilding three existing natural gas power plants and opting instead to spend that money building renewable energy projects. In a press conference, Garcetti said the decision will mitigate climate change and improve local air quality and also generate jobs.
This is what a Green New Deal looks like.
So L.A. is getting rid of all coal power and all natural gas power. We will be 100% renewable here in Los Angeles?
Yep.
Nice. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, no, we gotta rock. Electric Avenue.
Oh, sure. Play a song that makes me chair dance. Just go ahead and do that. So there's some good news. We've gotten off the schneid for the program. Thank you very kindly to Will in Chicago. Thank you so much. And thank you to Earther. That means we're down to oh goodness me, again with the ciphering. Make sure I get this right. Let's see. So that's 877. 77909. Thanks to Will in Chicago. Earther took us then down to 770. Oh, I can't even. We'll just say 771. Okay. $771 to go. And then Darlene in Connecticut, I got a note from her saying, you called and the sorority of Leans will answer. There's a $100 challenge on the table. And I'm just going in the order in which they were received. So there's a $100 challenge on the table, and that means that the next $100 that comes in, your 5 becomes 10, 10 becomes 20. If we raise the $100, we'll get it down to 500 and we'll call it 571. Yeah, because I'm not going to cheat and get the calculator out. I'm just not going to do it. 571 if we can meet Darlene's Sorority of Leans challenge. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you so very, very kindly indeed. And a reminder, fundraising for the month of February, if we can be where we need to be, will end this time next week. Friday on the Front Porch, not tomorrow, but next week, will be a fundraising-free Friday on the Front Porch. So it's something to look forward to. And then all of the remainder of February, namely the 28th, 27th, 26th, and 25th, will be fundraising-free as well. So 771 to go. Let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob? It's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia again, man.
What's happening, Reggie?
How do you feel about Norman Goldman going off the air, even though I know you talked about this last week? And how do you feel about Progressive Talk Radio, well, shrinking to the point of if you blink and you miss type existence, or should I say become the way of the dinosaur, nearly extinct or non-existent? And how can we save it from becoming extinct, you know?
We can talk about anything on this program. We can bring anything to the table.
Right.
I was kind of hoping that we would stay with the rather serious business but that's okay. That's okay. I'm sorry. Norman Goldman is going off the air. I'm not one of these hyper-competitive people who thinks that if somebody's succeeding, that means I'm failing.
Right.
Especially in the realm of progressive broadcasting, there is more than enough room for everybody.
Yes.
That having been said, this doesn't, as I said last week, this doesn't happen to right-wing broadcasters. Because right-wing wingnut welfare think tanks and white-wing organizations will give and give and give and give. For instance, Here's a great example. Some Nazi in Idaho, Reggie,
yes,
had enough money to buy robocalling time all over the state of Florida to,
yes,
do the vocal equivalent of blackface against Andrew Gillum in the recent gubernatorial election. And I don't care what Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis said about it, he benefited by it because it motivated the neo-Nazi Klansman, racist, sympathizer, whatever, vote in that state.
Yeah. But while progressive talk radio is somehow somewhat dwindling into near nothingness, conservative radio is growing like a giant, like a Goliath.
Well, but I mean, I think that's somewhat of a misleading impression. I'm not saying you're misleading. I'm saying you're getting a misleading impression. Because, one,
right,
the white wing's always talking about, well, you know, where's the left-wing ratings if they're so good? Yeah. Well, we're not allowed on the radio. I know how to do radio without saying fuck every second word. It just happens,
right,
that I can do that on the Internet and don't have to worry about some pearl-clutching freak at the FCC having a conniption.
Yeah,
but the fact of the matter is, the white wing has outlets where they can conglomerate,
right?
Where they can, right, aggregate their voices. Whereas,
right,
you know, we've got one of those in progressive voices,
right?
And then it's everybody else for themselves,
right? But I don't want to see you or Stephanie Miller or Leslie Marshall and Nicole Sandler, even Randy Rhoads, disappear, or even Mike, for that matter.
Well, the only way this program disappears is if people stop supporting it, Reggie.
Right. Well, that ain't going to happen. I know, because you have listeners that won't let that happen. And that goes for Nicole Sandler, too. I mean, she had him on her show yesterday, Norman Goldman. She had him on her show yesterday to talk about that. That, you know, that progressive radio is, well, not being funded enough, and that right-wing talk radio, as you would say, white-wing talk radio is being funded far way too much, and progressive talk radio not nearly enough as it should.
Well, the thing is, and I feel a little like a broken record here, and I hope I'm not putting people off, Reggie, is,
right,
the thing is, the white wing understands the value of getting the message out, and they are and because they're capitalists, they are willing,
right,
to pay to have it done. Okay,
right. Yeah.
Our side, well, you know, we're democratic socialists and stuff,
yeah,
and so,
yeah,
people are supposed to devote their lives to things, and you know, labor away in some form of noble poverty. While, you know, and you know, fight the good fight, comrade. You know, horse shit.
Yeah. Yes, and you know, yeah, and you would say, because we don't have to play it, we don't play dirty like they do. We don't have to in order to beat them. You know, don't become like your enemies. Or as you would say, don't become what you despise and hate most. Don't become a monster, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like them. And, you know, you don't have to play dirty tricks on people to get.
So I take it, Reggie, that you listen to a lot of progressive talk.
Yes, I do. Yeah, on the internet, of course, but yes, I do. Or clips of it, like Stephanie Miller and Nicole Sandler and Randy Rhoads, and you know, when they're live,
right?
Or you know, Leslie Marshall when she's live, you know, or even you yourself when you're live. Every night.
Well, I mean, I missed on Monday, and that's on me, but I try not to miss. I try awfully hard not to.
Yeah, because how can you listen to one side of talk radio without listening to the other? Because one side will give you a migraine, and the other side will try to be.
Oh, no, I do clips. I couldn't sit down to listen to, say, 2 hours of Mark Levin, the man with a voice made for print. I could not do it.
Who sound like Groucho Marx or somebody like that?
I don't know. To me, he sounds like the non-living shrieks that probably permeate the dark matter of space.
Right, or their overlord and master, Mr. Oxycontin, Jabba the Hutt, you know, EIB Golden Microphone, and Lazy Boy Easy Chair. Their industrious, shall we say, leader, or as I would say, overlord and master, Commander Rush Limbaugh, you know. He's like the Pied Piper, and they follow and do what everything he tells them to do. Right?
Well, yeah, and you know, remember I remember years ago seeing that he was making $50 million a year. That's another reason for me to like this 70% marginal tax rate, because that means every dollar that after $10,001,000, everything that Rush Limbaugh makes, at least he's going to have to give 70% of it back to the people of the United States that he shits all over every day of his miserable, misbegotten life.
Right. Does he live in a mansion somewhere?
Oh yeah, and he keeps his last I checked, I think he keeps his wife in a pit.
Yeah. What about his imitators like Sean Hannity and
Sean Hannity probably has Limbaugh just green with envy. Because Hannity is in the inner circle now. He can tell the President of the United States what to do and not to do.
Yeah, I thought we only had one president, not him, not three or four, not Ann Coulter, Rush Limbaugh, or Sean Hannity. I thought we only had one president.
And Jesus, what a toxic triumvirate that is.
Yes, it is, and it's dangerous.
But remember, Hannity was a client of Michael Cohen's alongside Donald Trump, so there's probably even more filthy business going on there.
Right, and how can we expose it so we can put all these guys behind bars, possibly once and for all, you know? How can we expose them?
Well, that's what I was getting, I mean, at least where Trump is concerned, that's what I was getting at in the first hour and a half of the program. But Reggie, let me say, I know you do listen to a lot of programs. I'm awfully glad that you take time to listen to this one. Do me a favor.
Thank you.
And this is another thing, and this is for everybody. If you believe in progressive talk radio, and if you understand that no limousine liberals are going to come riding to the rescue, then the best thing we can do is spread the good word. Tell people these programs are out there. Tweet about it. Facebook about it, whatever. Let people know it's out there. And I've talked on a number of occasions about the fact that I would love to have an excuse to finally have to bring 6 telephone lines back into this studio because 3 hours a night was going to be nothing but taking calls, bang, 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 you know, and just hearing what's on people's minds in this country.
Right, and of course, he's been trying to get back on terrestrial radio as a radio talk show host for years, but they wouldn't hire because of, well, ageism, number one. She's like...
Well, but no, she's you know, I can see that there's probably truth in that, but all the goddamn radio stations, Reggie, are owned by white wing corporations. I mean, we were talking about this just last week. If there happens to be a station that's succeeding with progressive programming, the white wing ownership of that station will shut it the hell down and turn it into bingo radio, where that's nothing but 24 hours a day of B-17. O-2.
Yeah.
Anything, because they don't dare let the progressive message out into the public airwaves.
Right,
and so, you know, Nicole can do as she wishes to do, and I love her to death, but I would not waste 15 seconds of the precious finite time of my life on this planet trying to get some goddamn right-wing radio station to put me on the air.
Right, I wouldn't either if I were her. And I know, like you say, you wouldn't either because you know they'll never, ever do it. They'll never ever do it. Or they'll turn into yet another sports station. How many more sports stations do we need?
Oh, right, Bob? Yeah, sure. Yeah, exactly. Well, Reggie, you have yourself a good evening, my friend. Let's talk soon, okay?
All right, man. And do you think that Trump will actually sign this deal this time or not?
Oh, no, I think he's going to do it. Because Mitch has told him that he will not allow a resolution condemning it onto the floor of the Senate of the United States of America. So he knows the fix is in, and he can get away with it unless the courts intervene, and he thinks the fix is in there because he thinks he's got a packed court up on Capitol Hill behind the Capitol now that he's got Ann's boy Neil and Brat Kavanaugh and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas and Sammy Bad Breath Alito, and he hopes that John Roberts will come along, and John Roberts probably will, because John Roberts is the most intelligent evil Republican in the entire United States of America.
Right, and you know that won't stop him even if they tell him not to do it. You think that's going to actually stop him from doing whatever he's the hell?
Well, that's
to
what
do?
Comes next is the Andrew Jackson question. Oh, the Chief Justice said that? How many divisions does the Chief Justice command? Actually, he didn't say that. Andrew Jackson said, "Well, the Chief Justice has made him order his order. Let him now enforce it." The Chief Justice has no power to order the arrest of the President of the United States. The Chief Justice has no power to order the impeachment of the United States.
Right, that's true, but you know how he is. He's a tyrant.
Well, yeah, it is because he's a tyrant, Reggie, and that is what, and that's what makes it all so goddamn dangerous. Because, you know, I'm waiting. Maybe after he signs the fucking document, maybe then the multimillionaire for-profit media will say, "Well, son of a gun, how about that? Looky here, we got us a constitutional crisis," when in fact we have been in one since January the 20th, 2017.
Right. So you think they'll go along with it too, the for-profit media?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, sure. I mean, they'll bloviate about it and say Bruga Bruga a lot. And they'll sell a shit ton of ads because capitalism.
Yeah.
But it'll have eyeballs on screens.
Yes, and internet too, right? And internet too. And I hope the Democrats don't cave into him this time. Hopefully, you know, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats don't cave into him this or any other time. I hope they stand strong and stand up against them, as they have been doing since they got in, since they got back in, you know, in the Congress. Do you think they will or will?
I don't know. I'm hoping maybe an Ilhan Omar or a Rashida Tlaib or an Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or a Sharice Davids will step up and lead all the old white men and say, "It's time to impeach this bastard."
But do you think they actually do it? Impeach him, that is.
Well, I mean, I think a bill of impeachment can get through the House, but that is what impeachment is. Impeachment is just getting the bill through the House. The trial in the Senate is where the action takes place, and I also want to see if Chinless Mitch will actually refuse to let a bill of impeachment be heard in the Senate, and that's the way I'd be betting.
Right. They tried to impeach Bill Clinton, possibly George W. Bush, his daddy, and Ronald Reagan. And they couldn't impeach Nixon because he quit and resigned before they could do anything else to him.
Reagan dodged it because Ben Bradley and Katherine Graham over at the Washington Post breathlessly clutched their goddamn pearls and said, "America can't stand another constitutional crisis." Bullshit.
Right.
The reason that stuff is in there is because the framers expected it to be used and used liberally. They wanted the framers wanted a constant sword of Damocles hanging over the head of the president, ensuring the president's good behavior.
Right. And like I said, they also tried it with Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and his daddy, too, right? They tried to impeach them, too, right?
No, there was no impeachment effort against George H.W. Bush. George H.W. Bush pardoned people like Elliot Abrams and Cap Weinberger to keep from being impeached before it came out that he had had his filthy, bloody Bush crime family hands inside every nasty bit of doings that wound up with dead, raped little girls in El Salvador and a genocide in Guatemala.
Right. But they went after Bill Clinton for nothing, right? They went after him for nothing.
They went after him for lying about a blowjob. And all of these assholes out there say, "Well, you know, the Mueller investigation's gone on long enough." The Whitewater investigation was an investigation that started over a bullshit losing land deal in Arkansas that went bad and clung and hung on and ginned along until it finally turned into being a case about a guy getting a blowjob from a consenting adult, which he then arguably lied about.
Yeah, and Kenneth Starr was hopping all over that. He was obsessing all over that, wasn't he, Bob?
Well, Ken Starr's a sleazy, perverse motherfucker because consider he had kittens with crocheted tails over a consensual blowjob, but he turned a blind eye to the rape of God knows how many women when he was running things down at Baylor Baptist University in Waco, Texas.
Yeah, and so is Matt Drudge. He's a motherfucker, too, man. He talked about it, too.
Well, I've never much paid attention to him. But anyway, got to roll out of here, Reggie. It's awful good talking to you. You have a good evening now, all right?
Yeah, you do too, Bob. And keep on keeping on, man. Stay alive, stay strong, and stay straight ahead, man.
Live to talk another day. We'll sure try.
Don't let them get you the way they did with Norman Goldman, although he decided to quit voluntarily because he was running out of money.
Well, hell, we run out of money every month, but we don't have the kind of investment that Norman had, and I'd get real nervous about that myself.
Yeah, don't let them do to you what they've done to him or anybody else who tries to spread the word out there, to spread the word of truth and knowledge, you know, and power, the word of knowledge, truth, and power out there on our Democratic Liberal Progressive side, because they never did that. On their side. They'll never do it on their side. It's a bunch of propaganda and lies and misinformation and disinformation.
Now, I understand. Reggie, have a good night. Take care, my friend.
Yeah, you do too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye. See you tomorrow.
All right. Later. Reggie calling from Decatur. And you know, as we talk about these matters of civics, the ability of the people to actually understand what's going on is part and parcel of why these civics issues, these issues of government, often go the way they do, because there are so few people who are speaking accurately or factually about what's happening. I mean, Jesus Christ, I turned on that filthy little habit I have every morning today, and they're sitting there bloviating about the Green New Deal. And God damn. You can't even get these multimillionaires to acknowledge the gravity of the situation, largely because the situation at this point still hasn't touched them. But it will. I know, Monique. Monique said, like I said, let Trump sign his national emergency and the next Democratic president can do what they want. I'm so sick and goddamn tired of all of them. Another thing I'm sick and tired of, being governed by polls. Has a pollster ever called you? Sure haven't called me. I think that may have happened like once. And they ask, but the thing is, they always tuck in, you know, there's going, well, you know, do you like the, what brand of paper towel do you use? Do you like one ply or two ply toilet tissue? What's your favorite can of pork and beans? Don't you love George W. Bush? Push polls, that kind of crap. We've got about an hour left in the program. We got a $100 challenge on the table, courtesy of Darlene of the Society of Leans, and hopefully we'll take a bite out of the deficit there. Let's go over and talk to Will in Chicago, who got us started this evening. Hey, Will, it's been a long time. I hope you're all right, my friend.
I am just very busy. Busy with the new school. We have a 2-day President's Day break, so I am able to shut my alarm so I'm not up slightly before 5 a.m. Central.
Ouch, that hurts. Hey, yes. I don't know what kind of device you're using, but if you could get a little closer to the mic, that would be really helpful because your audio is really low.
Let me raise this. I'm using a headphone. Haven't tried this yet. Is this better?
Some, but it's still pretty low.
Let me try calling in on the landline.
Okay. You can try that.
Yep.
All right.
Right there. Bye.
Okay, we will wait for Will to return, and then we've got another person on the line as well. Hmm. Oh, this is uncomfortable silence, but you can't really jump into another topic, because I haven't heard from Will in eons, and I want to hear what he's got to say. Will, by the way, you do know it's 844-843-4676, right? Huh. Okay. Let's see here. Ah, that may be Will. Is that you, Will?
Yes, it is.
And that is monumental. If you can hear me, that is monumentally better.
Yes, because I have an old headphone, which I think I'll need to replace, and it says it's supposed to work for speakers. Yes. So, as I was saying, oh, hold on. Let me make sure I lower the voice volume.
Yeah, because I hear me back there.
And
I know for a fact I'm not in your living room.
Yep. So as I was going to say, the point about radio is important because he who controls the message controls what people think. Today is the birthday of a friend of mine whom I'll mention by name, Donna Halper. She was for many years a radio industry consultant going from small to medium-sized stations. And in the 1990s, she had to stop when the industry consolidated. So instead of having potentially hundreds of clients, there were essentially six. And the local radio station, WCPT, the Progressive Talk Station, it's airwaves some 30 miles from Chicago, fade out and are replaced by a right-wing Texas station, which has Mark Levin, who, how would I say, makes me sound somewhere between Winston Churchill and John Barrymore.
That is simply perfect. Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I'm sorry. The only time I would begin to sound like him is if I have a flu that is so bad.
Well, first you'd have to pitch your you'd have to pitch your voice up about two octaves.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm not going to jump up and down and have an unfortunate accident on a teeter totter.
No, let's don't do that and say we didn't. I think only dogs and white wingers can actually hear Mark Levin.
Unfortunately, my hearing is almost on the level of a Vulcan, so I can unfortunately hear him. There are other things I would rather listen to than Mark Levin, such as Dead Air. Stephanie Miller playing a continual loop for 3 hours, the Yankee Doodle fart version, or any number of things. But, I mean, this is one of the problems. If you don't get the message out, people are very easy to convince if all they hear is one voice. This is why we still have one of the reasons we still have about a third of the American public supporting the president. And even if most of us oppose, it's still enough for him to try to hold on to, as well as Mitch McConnell, a man who I believe will not betray Donald Trump until the moment he is convinced doing so is for his political survival.
Well, there's not enough polling in Kentucky right now to show that he's in any kind of peril from his support of him. So for the time being, he's going to continue to walk along with his little turtle head where the sun doesn't shine on Donald Trump.
Yes. I mean, essentially, this is going to sound very cynical. I think I mentioned last year to my students, I taught 1984, and the Republican Party is increasingly having similarities with the party in Orwell's novel. Namely, it's pretty much about power. Sadly, to give you an idea how bad our country is, the school I was at last year, which let me go, I'm grateful they let me go. They have been closed 2 weeks because their boilers died with the cold snap. So this is one of the problems we face. We have, we literally have an infrastructure in America that's falling apart. We have money that's being spent on a wall, which, how would I say it, will not work. In fact, one of the best bumper stickers I saw someone post to Facebook was wall, $85 billion, a 32-foot ladder, 762 pesos.
There you go, and it's about 30 miles away, right?
Yes, yes, and I mean, this will, if he does declare a national emergency, and by the way, Talking Points memo has a story on Pelosi and Schumer drawing a red line, but we'll see what that means, that if this happens, it will be never-ending lawsuits. The court, you can't tell. I mean, actually, the only hope I have for John Roberts is he's more concerned about the image and legacy of the court than anything else, which explains some of the decisions where he seemed to align with the minority there. But elections have consequences, and even though I...
And with regard to this particular president, stupidity has consequences, too.
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, quite literally, even if we avoid the worst of global climate change, and I'm prepared to do what it takes, I'm even not ruling out the extreme options such as the one you famously mentioned about Edward Teller and the mirrors, because at least you could, after it works, after, I don't know, 100, 200 years, just launch them towards Alpha Centauri and send some Duke Ellington their way, which might be appreciated. But suffice it to say, we have serious problems, and this is why we need outlets like the Horn. I know you tend not to do much in the way of advertising, but here's the thing. We need outlets, and for the moment, until we have those progressives with resources to do so who can buy stronger radio stations that aren't drowned out by Mark Levin when the sun sets, it's going to be up to the individual. So one thing I did on Facebook was when Mr. Goldman mentioned his show closing, I mentioned the Horn is, and I was pleased to see on their Facebook page for the show others did. We need to get the word out, and we also need to be active. We also have to remember this is a marathon. Republican Party essentially started its modern incarnation late 60s, early 70s with such things as the Powell Doctrine, and he ended up on the Supreme Court, and also in planning long-term strategies. We need to have people running for school board, aldermen, county seats, planning commissioners, and work
yeah,
away
if you want to get ladder. Into if you want to get into politics, maybe a good course of action might be to run for a lower level political office because you can do good there, instead of, say, just as an example, running a publicity stunt primary campaign against an incumbent Democrat.
Yeah, because here's the thing: if you build up your credibility, you have resources, you have training, and you develop allies. I am a great admirer of the Five Nations of the Iroquois. As a friend, may she rest in peace, Reverend Patricia Moore, told me they call themselves the Haudenosaunee, who have the seven generations removed concept. Namely, they would try to figure out what the results of the decision would be seven generations out. We need to think long-term, even as we act. So if I was a person living on the Texas border who would lose about half my land because someone's plan for a wall would go through it, yes, I would be getting together with neighbors and filing suit. However, we also need to think long-term. Our situation is not hopeless. We have seen situations far more dire than this. I mean, one of the articles I'm going to give my students next week is we're going through the wonderful world of state-mandated testing. Oh, why could not my parents, grandparents have not immigrated to Denmark where they don't do so much testing? Oh, wait, they would have had to have waited till well after World War II. But yeah, suffice it to say, yeah, but well, we would have been smuggled out to Sweden on a rowboat. But suffice it to say, one thing I'm going to give them is articles on an article on the Tuskegee Airmen. Their situation then must have seemed dire. And yet they held on to help. They did what it took, and their performance was part of the thing, reasons that led someone with a backbone named Harry S. Truman to decide, I'm going to end segregating the military into white and colored units. So we need to have courage, and we have to remember, as dire as things are, we still have hope. We still have outlets like The Horn and others, and Lord bless them. I mean, the joke is, if somehow I had $1 billion, I would probably buy a few radio stations and think of a few good people.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, Will. There are people out there that have Jed Clampett walking around money who are liberal, but they would rather give $100,000 to a political candidate so they can stand and have their picture taken next to them than support the grunt work that makes it possible for those candidates to be successful. There's actually
right, and that, and
there's
that,
a, there's a term for that, and it's that, vulgar, and it's called star fucking, and it's very, very real.
Yeah, and as I hate to say it, we do have the potential, but I think one of our problems is, unlike the right, we tend to fragment ourselves on causes. So, and yet my approach is, I'm for many things at once. I am for a peace in the Middle East between the Israelis and the Palestinians based on a two-state solution. I want LGBTQ rights for all because I have a rule. If everyone's rights aren't safe, how are mine going to be safe? Even boiling down to naked self-interest before moving on to the realm of fairness and justice. I do not believe that we should have schools where 90% of people are on free lunch. And for many of these kids, the free breakfast and the free lunch are their meals. And I do not believe that our best days are behind us. We can improve. We can grow. I mean, this is one of the things about this country. As flawed as we are, as flawed as we have been, we are capable of change. And in the end, the change has to begin on the individual level. So whether your idea of change is doing what I did in October and early November, which was knock on doors, and we all got the Democratic congressman, yes, he's more of a conservative than I would like, but guess what? He did support Pelosi's leadership vote. But, I mean, you just get out there and you do things. So whether you want to knock on doors, run for office, support the rights of others, or reach into your pocket and say, okay, I'm going to support this cause, and I'm going to support The Horn and other things, well, guess what? You can make a difference.
You know what makes you so able to do that, Will? You're able to engage in critical thinking.
Yes, and this is something I try to teach my students, which isn't always easy because, well, let's face it, I teach at a school now, which is better than the one I was at last year. The one last year is the one that is 98 years old and had the boilers out for 2 weeks, where but our free lunch rate is 75%. Reduced is about 20%. I think we're about 5% paying for their lunch. So, I mean, and when you have those stresses, critical thinking isn't often stressed, and school districts aren't always doing that. But by being able to think critically, I can look at problems from different angles. Whereas for, I fear, too many people in Trumpistan, they do not wish to think. They wish to be led.
That's the essence of authoritarianism, Will.
Yes, John Dean, I believe in his book, The Conscience of a Conservative, correct me if I'm wrong, anyone, said there are about 30% of Americans with authoritarian personalities, and the vast majority of those are authoritarian followers. They want to be led. They want to be told what to do. And yet, by being able to critically think about issues, we have been able to do remarkable things. Critical thinking is what allowed us to build the Mars Opportunity rover, which exceeded all expectations. And it's what's allowing us to have a serious conversation about the things such as the Green New Deal, climate change, and making improvements. So I think one thing we have to do is ask ourselves, who are we? What do you want? Where are you going? To make a non-obligatory Babylon 5 reference, since we already have the obligatory Star Trek reference tonight. But we have to remember, we are not powerless, because the essence of tyranny is to tell you, you have no power, sit down, do what you are told. It is the essence of democracy to ask questions. And I believe we have the courage to do so. The question is, will we find it in ourselves? So the president goes forward with the emergency declaration. I would hope to see the Democrats oppose this wholeheartedly, so much so that Roberts will wonder about the credibility of its court, which has been continually diminished since 2000 in Bush v. Gore. So, again, it's up to us. If not us, who? If not now, when? To partially quote Hillel.
Hillel comes in, non-religious person that I am, find that Hillel comes in handy rather often. You know, you mentioned something there with the Opportunity Rover. I saw a tweet earlier today. I don't know if people know, but the Opportunity Rover is pretty much dead.
Sadly, its last message was batteries are getting low and it's getting dark. And yet it lasted 14 years when it had a lifespan of months.
Yeah, and I saw a guy tweet earlier today that same message from Opportunity. Batteries getting low, it's getting dark, and he tweeted, "That's the saddest damn thing I've seen a robot say since Tears and Rain." You remember remember Blade Runner?
Blade Runner. Oh, yes. And I was going to say, we have possibilities. I mean, good heavens. Imagine an alternate world where instead of fighting the Vietnam War, there was a peaceful settlement. And ironically, Ho Chi Minh, believe it or not, initially he wanted to make Vietnam's Declaration of Independence being lifted from the U.S.
Well, he did. He did lift it. They did. That's what it was.
Right. So, I mean, imagine that we had continued with a robust space program. And the technology from that was feeding off, much like as for electronics. But imagine if we hadn't stopped in the 70s with Nixon deciding, oh, we don't need to go. And who knows? We might actually have had people on Mars or might have determined by drilling into Europa there's some primitive form of life there, or maybe even something multicellular like the equivalent of fish. But the universe is full of wonders and possibilities. And if we do not step forward to try to find them, both in solving the problems on Earth and marveling at the wonder and glory of our universe. However you believe it exists or if there's a higher power or not, then we are limiting ourselves. We are not living up to our full possibilities of being human. And here's the thing, as awful as humanity has been, and I am an English teacher who's also certified in history, has read a lot, seen a lot, talked to, listened to people who survived, a woman who survived Mengele's experiments on twins. And yet I still believe in human possibilities for goodness and change. So we have to ask ourselves, are we going to be the ones who step up? Do not expect a political messiah. There's an old story in the Talmud where a man is planting a tree and his neighbor runs up to him and says, look, friend, the messiah has come, the messiah has come. And the man calmly finishes planting the tree, waters it, makes sure everything is fine. Come, let us greet this messiah you speak of. We must be the ones who do the work. If we get someone as eloquent as Dr. King, as visionary as FDR, or even more visionary, we are the ones who have to do the work. If not us, who? If not when, now when? If we are only for ourselves, what are we? Let us find the courage to be our best selves, if not for our own sake, for those yet to come. Because if we don't, history, assuming there is history, will not speak well of us. The world is waiting. The hour is late. And we are the ones who have to act.
That's exquisite and absolutely true.
Well, I mean, there's many ways to act. Right? Make sure you're registered to vote no matter what obstacles are thrown in your way. Support people whom you agree with or at least agree with, I would say, 65-70% of the time. And then just go out and do something. Try making a difference. And along the way, if you are so moved to contribute to this program or other worthy causes, you need it, because the situation is not ideal, but neither is it hopeless. If we view we are hopeless, if we view there is no possibility of building a better future, then are we not listening to the siren song that is being sent our way by bloviators such as Limbaugh, Mark Levin, and others, and the people behind them who they are serving as courtiers to would-be feudal lords.
So true. I mean, I really think we are at a moment. I've said that we've been in a constitutional crisis since January the 20th, 2017, Will. But I think we're getting to a point where there's no more evading it. And what comes after, and some Republicans are even noticing it, and what scares them the most is that if Trump does this, some Democratic president will use it to use the National Emergency Act to declare the Green New Deal. And I think it would be fine.
Right, or decide that 40,000 Americans dead each year from guns is a national emergency. Dear Lord, if a foreign power or terrorist organization had killed 40,000 people in 1 year, we would be tempted to use the nuclear arsenal.
Yeah, precisely.
And yes, and yet we do not treat it as an emergency. We do not treat it as an emergency. There are millions of kids in Appalachia, in Chicago, in Los Angeles, who do not have enough to eat, who are not receiving quality educations, and whose job prospects after high school, if they graduate, do not look good. And this is not an emergency. So I think we have to realize this is a moment. So hopefully we'll rise to the occasion. We have been. Perhaps it will be said of our generation what Winston Churchill said, half jokingly, about America. America always does the right things when it has run out of other options. So let's hope we are the ones doing the right thing.
I hope so indeed. Will, take care. I hope you're able to get back to the classroom soon. God,
I'm fine. I'm just on a normal break. But some of the people I worked with last year, they have been out for 2 weeks. I feel for them because that school's in a community, Gary, even tougher than mine. I'm a town over East Chicago where things are a lot better. But here's the thing. Should any school be closed for 2 weeks because its boilers are not working?
That's inexcusable.
It's inexcusable. And yet I live in a state, though perhaps not forever, where they have a teacher compensation board they just created that has no teachers on it. But Indiana, except for a few areas such as mine, is a red sea dotted with islands of blue.
Yeah, there's a reason Indiana's the mess that it is. Will, have yourself a good evening. Stay warm. Spring can't be that far away, my friend.
I'm already seeing some signs. So let's hope for spring, and let's hope that we are ready come what may.
Indeed, indeed. Will from Chicago, you take care. Don't be such a stranger.
Take care.
Bye now.
Will not.
And thank you, Will. Thank you so much for the help. It is much appreciated. That's our buddy Will calling from the greater Chicagoland area. Some thank yous to send out. That we've made some progress on made some progress on the challenge issued by Darlene of the Society of Leans. Thanks going out to Charlene and to Roberto. That means we've got $55 to go on Darlene's challenge and about 34 minutes to get there. Don't everybody wait until 2 minutes before the program's over. $55 to go, and we will knock down the fundraising deficit to a grand total for tomorrow night of $570. So that's a really, really big deal. And thanks again to Darlene. Thanks to Will in Chicago. Thanks to Arthur. Thanks to Roberto. Thanks to Charlene and Rogues Island, a charter member of the Sorority of Leans. Let's go over to and see if I don't know what I did. I may have screwed this up completely. Are you there, Scott?
Yeah, Bob. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay. It was showing me. It was weird. It was showing me a pause button, and then it didn't. So.
Well,
good.
Life is like that. Fraudulent pauses. I want to, there's a couple of things I want to do. I got a couple of serious things, but a couple of, first of all, I want to echo and second Will's comments about two of the things he touched upon. One regarding Donna Halper, who I never worked with, never met, never was consulted by her, but I know her by reputation in the radio universe. And that woman has forgotten more about proper execution of radio than most people running radio and on radio today ever knew. So there's that. And she's written a number of books, and you can find them on Amazon. They're pretty pricey new. There's one about women in broadcasting. There's one of the history of radio in Boston. There's one about talk radio icons. And like I say, they're old enough to be rare. And if you want to get a new copy, that's going to cost you. You might be able to find a secondhand used copy from Amazon or one in a local bookstore. She knows her stuff is what I'm saying. And happy birthday to her. And one of the things that Will touched upon, and I'm going to put it slightly differently than he did, the problems that face us are not going to be addressed anytime soon for one simple reason. And it's about a dynamic called not being fully present and not being fully awake slash aware. And there are two times when human beings are most likely to be fully present and fully aware and awake. One is during the act of lovemaking. Not all human beings, but most of them. During the act of lovemaking, you tend to be fully present, aware, awake, da-da. The other instance is when you step off the curb and you're about to be run over by an oncoming bus. You know, you're truly in the moment.
Yeah.
And truly aware, okay? So until we can get out of our self-imposed hypnotic state and become fully present and fully aware and awake, very little's going to happen. But anyway, that's that. I just wanted to echo that. I do have a serious thing, but two real quick things from Shea Guru. Sometime in the night, a huge bunch hunk of palm fronds dropped down into the front yard from one of the trees, the palm trees out front. It's completely blocked my sidewalk. I don't.
Well, you know, I think if you were president, you could probably declare a national emergency over that.
Well, yeah, no, I probably could. No, good night. So there's that. I don't expect I'll be going out anytime soon. Luckily, I went to the store yesterday. And speaking of yesterday, my niece, 37-year-old niece back in Virginia, whom I've never met until yesterday, is in town with a friend this week. We went to one of the three great locations of Lestat's Coffee House here in San Diego. If you ever come to San Diego...
Why do I think of a vampire every time you mention that place?
Well, that's what inspired the name and the decor. They're open 24/7, 365 days a year. There are three convenient locations. I know the owner. He's a stellar human being, the hardest coffee entrepreneur west of the Mississippi. And anyway, my niece and I, who I finally met, had a delightful 2.5-hour conversation and just meeting one another, being in each other's presence. And plus, I introduced her to John, the owner and founder of Lestat's, and he gave us our coffee free. And if you're sitting down, Bob, I must tell you this.
I am. I often do this program seated. It's true.
Yesterday at Lestat's, I had a medium-sized, what they call a Milky Way. It's hot coffee with a shot of espresso and caramel flavoring and chocolate flavoring and foam on top. And I want to tell you, if it hadn't been raining yesterday, I would have been up on the roof putting on new shingles. I was wired for sound with actual coffee, and you'll be proud of me knowing that I can consume actual
coffee.
Well,
I was going to say it's no taster's choice, but it wasn't bad.
Oh, God, it was wonderful. It was toe-curlingly wonderful. And speaking of toe-curlingly, a very happy Valentine's Day to you and to the lovely Agnes and to all the Horn family members.
Well, thank you, Scott.
I hope at some point in our waning hours of Valentine's Day or night that you have the opportunity to enjoy an exquisite moment with the one you love, each of you taking turns slowly devouring an inverted Godiva chocolate-covered cherry resting in one another's navel, and playing Explorer, playing Lewis and Clark as the sweet liquid center explores the terrain.
Jesus! This is...
wait a minute, my glasses fogged up. Hold on a sec. Well, anyway, happy Valentine's Day to you. Yeah, and
go see what the wife's up to.
Okay.
You know where that line comes from, right?
Yes. It's a Wonderful Life.
Bert and Ernie are the cabbie and the cop.
Yeah.
And that's where Bert and Ernie's name came from, too.
Yes. And I can't think of the actress's name.
Violet Bix walks by and...
this old thing?
Yeah, this old thing.
I only wear it when I don't care what I've got on.
And I forget if Bert looks at Ernie or Ernie looks at Bert and says, I'm going to go see what the wife's up to.
Ay, ay, ay. But anyway, earlier when you were talking with Reggie and earlier when you were doing the Bobathon, the Philibobster, I wanted to not lose the thread when you were talking about the drums of war being played on by folks like who's the guy with the porn stash?
John Bolton, yeah,
and others. Last night I watched one of several episodes of a program on PBS called The Dictator's Handbook. Each episode is an hour long, covering people like Hitler, Saddam Hussein, Mussolini, General Franco, who's still dead, by the way.
Yeah, he is still dead, yes.
And last night was Idi Amin. Ay, ay, ay. War, unnecessary war, is a diversionary tool used by dictators. They list, in the course of the series, all the different tools that dictators commonly use. And diversionary war, unnecessary diversionary war, is one of the tools in their kit that dictators use to divert attention from their own misdeeds domestically. And Idi Amin declared war on neighboring Tanzania, I believe it was. Now, we're making these noises as if we're seriously contemplating military action against Venezuela, who's in a weakened state because of hyperinflation, okay? And a power struggle between someone who was sort of not honestly elected for another term and someone who swore himself in, who I believe Trump supports, our government supports, the new guy. But what do Venezuela and Iran have in common? Could it be
oil?
Three-letter word.
Oil? 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 Oil?
Yes. Yes.
Canola, I'm sure. Maybe olive.
Oh, no. You can put this shit in your car and go beep, beep, and down the road. And God knows there's enough stuff that has been mentioned in the last 2 years and stuff around the corner, courtesy of Mueller, and the legal people up in New York in the various positions of power regarding Trump and his cronies and apologists and supporters, that when that shit does hit the fan, as it will, moving the military or taking action against Venezuela would be the ideal diversionary tactic. I mean, ideal from Trump's point of view. So you're not you're right on track in terms of what is around the bend, and it's not pretty. This fucking national emergency with this wall business.
Oh no, there are so many, there are so many things tucked away with there are so many powers tucked away in that national emergency business, and I don't even necessarily want to go there. But, I mean, there's things that affect the everyday lives of Americans.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that Trump is a dictator.
I'm just saying he's a dick. No, sorry, couldn't resist.
What a dick.
Wait a minute. Yeah, this is a professional radio program. Hold on. Right. God damn it.
You dick!
There.
You dick, yes. No, I won't say that Trump is... I'll say he is...
Oh, where'd you go?
Hello?
Yeah, there you are.
All right. If he does, you know, in terms of puppetry, strings are just too childlike. He has got a hand up him
Yeah, I mean, there's a thumb where the chin is, and there's a couple of fingers in his sinuses, and you know,
it's
where the rest of the arm is that gets really disgusting.
Well, and it ain't no Muppet, friendly, fuzzy, happy face, ping pong.
No, this is Muppet.
So there's a hand that's attached to an arm, which is attached to a torso, and who is this? It's beginning to come into focus. Ooh. Vladimir something or other, could it be Putin? You know, so it's
the entrepreneur, the worldwide global entrepreneur who brought you Putinka vodka precisely 2 years before Trump introduced Trump brand vodka. Although, by the way, I was in the liquor store. Ooh, don't ask.
Do tell.
I found Hammer and Sickle brand vodka. No kidding.
No.
Russian vodka, and it's Hammer and Sickle, and they're trying to sell it for Grey Goose prices.
What's in it? Is it grain or is it potatoes?
No, it's grain.
Oh.
No, the only potato vodka I can find is the Luksusowa from Poland.
Yeah.
But I used it to make my cherry cordial. You know, dried cherries that I soak in vodka.
Yeah.
Because
did you get any Hammer and Sickle vodka?
No, I'm not going to drop that kind of money on a Russian import. I mean, the only Russian import I'd drop serious coin on would be caviar, and fortunately for me, I don't much care for caviar.
Yeah, I've never had it, believe it or not.
Tastes like fish eggs.
Yeah, well, that's probably why I haven't had it.
Tastes like really salty, kind of skanky tapioca.
The closest I could come is pseudo caviar.
No, I mean, I don't mind a little sprinkling of like salmon roe on top of my sushi.
Yeah.
But to just
I've never had sushi.
Just to dip one of those little old spoons in there and get what seems like an outsized amount of fucking fish eggs and put it on sorry. I mean, I have. But if you've ever seen the movie Big, there's that scene where Tom Hanks, who's a kid in a grown-up's body, first tastes caviar, and he just with his tongue going it's an acquired taste, and yeah. I freely admit to being a Philistine.
Well, no, I wouldn't say you're a Philistine. You are more adventurous when it comes to stuff that you would consume than some people, me anyway. I'm
totally stoked because we're about to get our first sushi bar in Fayetteville.
I've never had sushi. I've never wanted sushi. There's a place downtown here in San Diego.
I imagine there's several in a town the size of San Diego.
It's just to give you orientation. I've never been there, but every time I pass it, it's next door to the historic Spreckles Theater at, I guess, 2nd and Broadway downtown. And every time I pass the place, there's always a line to get in. So usually that's a good indication of
you start with something easy like tuna. Tuna's like eating rare beef.
Yeah, but I don't like rare beef. I'm a real pill tonight, Bob.
Fuck? Are you like Trump? You want your steak turned into shoe leather? We may stop talking.
No. I like it medium well thereabouts, depending on who's preparing it. Because some people.
Well, see, I'm already on the fighting side of Brother Deacon Asa. That weren't caviar you had, goddammit. Proper caviar tastes like pure decadent pleasure. You're going to hell for that blasphemous bullshit, Kincaid. So maybe I just had the wrong caviar, or maybe I bought the bait fish eggs down at the Rippy Martin, and it wasn't a proper substitute.
I don't know. I've seen it. Now, if I go to Kroger. Now, Kroger's probably, Ralph's. If Ralph's is not the place, it's probably not the place to buy caviar. But I've seen it in these teeny tiny $17 jars of it.
Yes.
Red or black?
Yep, black.
Now, will that give me an adequate or even
a more than. Depending on how it works out, you may walk next door to your neighbor, whoever your neighbor is, even if you don't know them, and go, "Hey, I got some caviar. You want some? No, get a big spoonful."
You know, will the cat eat it if I don't
know? Oh, the cat's eating it.
No, I'm serious, because she's, you know, because I don't like to see things.
I mean, there's
away.
Beluga, and there's a couple of other, gradations, and you know, $1,000 an egg, kind of crazy shit. And it,
no, Beluga is not a brand name. That's the type.
No, that's the type, and I'm trying to remember what the other kind is. And
you open the jar and it goes.
No.
All right.
God love you for thinking that way, though. Hey, let me jump in real quick. Thank you very kindly to Kitty in Boston. We have all of $35 to go to meet Darlene's challenge from the sorority of Leans, and we got about 15 minutes to knock out that last $35. So it sure would be nice if we could do that.
Dear friends, and you are my friends. We do not want to see the show go away. We definitely do not want to see Bob resort to going down to the check cashing store. No, no, no. We must step up, step in. Do our pot.
Take that caviar?
Money.
There's pot?
Yeah, pot. Take that caviar money and send it to Bob. And the Lord will bless you real, real good. Plus, you'll have radio.
Real good. And by the way, Brother Deacon Asa, who is now, I guess, the official de facto Horn Caviar correspondent, says, "Don't know real caviar costs no $17. That's fucking fancy salmon roe they're trying to pass off as caviar."
Well, I've never looked at the jar to see what's in it.
Oh, that, yeah, I'm going crazy now trying to remember the word. Because there's some, you know, there's some serious coin caviar out there. I love it. That's why we have the internet. Types of caviar.
It's like high quality betting. You can get all crazy and spend
$2,000. Beluga, Sterlet, Kaluga Hybrid, American Osetra, Siberian Sturgeon, and Savaruga. Osetra is the one that I've heard of that's supposed to be so godforsaken awesome.
Yeah.
If it's been pasteurized, it has less culinary and economic value, I'm told, by Mr. Internet.
Okay.
Yeah, Osetra. Mm-hmm. And so,
Osetra.
Yeah. Oh, what?
Or Rochester.
Oh, what?
I don't know. I'm still wired from that cup of real coffee yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yeah. It was good. I mean, it was, you know, it tasted sort of like a Milky Way, too. But you drink it. You don't
slice
it
up. Here in Hillbilly Hell, we have a new thing. Had to go to Summersville today to fill Agnes's prescriptions. And lo and behold, we say that a lot around here when we're surprised.
Yeah.
The hospital there in Summersville has put in a real live, no kidding, honest to goodness espresso machine. And they've got, there were two young women in there who were getting them, one of them had something that was like rose water and coffee and milk, and the other one had a chocolate-covered cherry latte with foam thingy. And so I just, you know, I was just getting Agnes a macchiato. But the best coffee bar in Summersville, West Virginia, is Summersville Memorial Hospital.
Now, is it like in the cafeteria?
No, it's in like the gift shop. You walk in the front, there's a gift shop. You can buy a T-shirt that says, "I saw the goat on Powell Mountain. Don't ask." And you can get a caramel macchiato with half-calf soy latte and extra foam. And they've got all their little flavoring agents there, and it looks like a pretty respectable espresso machine. And yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, I look, it's a new thing now. I look at Agnes and go, "Honey, you want to go to the hospital for a coffee?"
There you go. Maybe you'll pass a Godiva shop on the way. Yeah. Who knows?
Hoo wee, living large.
Yeah. God, I don't know, Bob. Watch that. I don't know if it's streaming yet because it's still showing on a weekly basis on PBS. The Dictator's Handbook. Oh man, so I haven't seen all the episodes, but the one about Franco was particularly chilling. That guy was a son of a bitch of the highest order.
Just
in recent years, they're discovering mass graves.
Well, look, I mean, look, Mussolini, dead. Hitler, dead. Franco lived to be a joke made by Chevy Chase.
Yeah, died in, what, 75 or 6, thereabouts?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bad news. Bad news.
And see, I love the stream of consciousness stuff that happens when topics pop up unbidden here. We went from sushi to caviar and back again, and Lee in New York says, subject line, sushi. At my employer, we were replacing our primary computer system. We had a consultant to help us get ready. His only knowledge was where to get good sushi in the area. He could not answer any software questions. That's why he was a consultant. One day, he and a coworker were chatting. The consultant said to me, "Lee, I know you don't like me, but can we settle this mano a mano?" I replied, "Well, that takes two men." My coworker broke into unending laughter. The consultant could not say a word. His brain could not achieve a word of response. That is a classic, classic burn.
Oh.
Marty says, "Forget the caviar. I'll go for the sushi after using a Geiger counter with plenty of wasabi." And Irish Dave, meanwhile, says, "But if fish eggs don't taste like chicken, why would I eat that?" Jesus, you people.
There's a question to wrap your head around, keep you up nights. I forgot the most important, to me, TV viewing tip of all. And it's a little ways down the road, but I saw it in my news feed yesterday. There's going to be a movie using some of the characters in Breaking Bad. It's being directed by Vince Gilligan, who created this show. It's going to be in a post-Breaking Bad.
Don't ruin anything. Hold on. No, remember, I never finished. I don't know who's dead.
Okay, well, it's going to be in a... I can do this safely. It's going to be in a post-Breaking Bad universe with Jesse Pinkman and his goings-on after the finale of Breaking Bad. Bryan Cranston is open to be in it. And I forget who else, but it's going to premiere on Netflix and run on Netflix and then... possibly go into theaters. I mean, not theaters, but AMC, which is unusual. Normally, shows are on AMC and then they go to Netflix. But Vince Gilligan knows which side of the cracker his caviar is on, and he's going to launch it on Netflix first, and then it'll be on AMC because he knows the power of Netflix. Oh, man, I'm excited about that.
That could be pretty exciting.
I hope Trump doesn't end the fucking world before all of this comes to pass, because I'll be pissed.
I've been given an assignment by Steve from Georgistan. He says, "I got lobster tails and duck eggs trying to figure out a tasty recipe. So far, I got nothing."
Wait a minute. Lobster tail and duck eggs?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you can do with that is an omelet of some sort.
No. I was thinking maybe duck egg drop lobster bisque.
I mean, that would be good. I have had lobster and I have had duck eggs before.
I'm not that big of an egg fan, but the little soft boiled egg in that bowl of sushi. Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
That was special. Oh, and and here's a real simple consumer recommendation, because it's in all the stores. It is stupidly expensive. It's unsustainable as all fuck because it's in a plastic cup. But they've been advertising it on TV, and I saw it and they keep it over there in the aisle with the eggs, and it's called Just Crack an Egg.
Oh yeah, I've seen the ads for that.
And so it feels like there's nothing in it, but it's a little packet with like some ham and some onions and some potatoes and some mushrooms, maybe some seasonings. And you crack an egg into it and throw it in the microwave. And
yeah, it's the omelet. It's morning breakfast.
It's just a little omelet that takes, you know, a minute and a half in the microwave.
Yeah.
And if you're and the funny thing is, it doesn't look like that much. It's just one egg. But I had one the other morning, and the damn thing was a protein load that lasted me from like 7 in the morning till noon.
Well, when I first saw the ad for it, I immediately thought of a product that you could find in the canned meat aisle in the 70s called Tuna Twist. Does anybody remember Tuna Twist?
No, that's lost on me. But let me tell you, you can tweak this just add an egg stuff.
Yeah.
Because when it comes out of the microwave, because of the miracle of microwave technology, it's hotter than the interior of the sun and verging on nuclear fusion.
Yeah.
So what you do is you take a little spoonful dollop of cream cheese and some dill weed and work into it. And you got something really just decadently special, even if you don't have any caviar laying around.
I'm going to have to get a sharp kitchen knife and hack my way through the palms in the front walkway.
Yeah, I mean, you weren't kidding. I saw that picture. It's like, is the landlord sending anybody over, or do you have to just weave the palm fronds into a mat or something?
Well, I took that, actually dry them out and go door-to-door to Catholic churches this spring. You know, I'll be the, my neighborhood distributor of palms for Palm Sunday. Do Protestant churches do palm distribution?
The closer they get to their Roman Catholic roots, yes. Your Lutherans, your Presbyterians, your Whiskey Episcopals and so forth. Yeah, they do.
Now, there's a lot of damn... I don't know what the wholesale price for Palm Sunday fronds are, but yeah, maybe get out there and dry them out and set up a little.
Well, don't they burn the palm fronds to make the smudge that they draw the little plus sign on your head with?
Yeah, okay. For Ash Wednesday.
Yeah.
So, but I'm going to try. It's Just Break an Egg is the name of the product. I must try that.
But they got several different kinds. There's a turkey sausage one that has mushrooms, and then there's a ham one, and there's a bacon one.
Yeah.
I haven't found the chicken one yet.
Yeah, I probably tried the ham and bacon because I'm not real big on mushrooms. I know I'm horrible to say these things, but...
Ooh, and even though you don't like mushrooms, in the cutout bin at Kroger's the other day...
Yeah.
I found bags of dried porcinis and dried shiitakes, and I grabbed them some bitches up.
Mm-hmm. Shiitake, ain't that shit take?
Yeah, that is shit take.
Yeah.
But it occurred to me that we've been on kind of a risotto kick, and it occurred to me that you could... just kind of crumble up some of those dried mushrooms and throw it in there with the risotto, and then when you hit it with your liquids, wow, that could be special.
Yeah. Well, I depends on what it is. If I have there's certain types of meat dishes, beef dishes, that can be served with mushroom gravy, and that's good. But on
A mushroom risotto that part of the liquid that cooks the mushroom or cooks the risotto is champagne.
Oh really?
Oh yes. And then a little finely chopped onion, little finely chopped celery, and mushrooms in the risotto, and then top it with a pan with some pan seared scallops.
That's starting to sound better with each passing moment.
I just made myself real hungry. But with that, and with $35 remaining on Darlene's challenge, it's time for us to get out of here.
Well, it so often is, Bob, but thanks for letting me share. Again, I hope you and Agnes have a delightful Valentine's evening, and same goes for everybody else in the Horn family. I will sit here alone.
Being a proper hillbilly, I did earlier today get her one of those heart-shaped boxes of Russell Stover chocolates. Because we don't have fancy stuff like none of that Godiva around here.
Aw. That's so sweet, Bob.
Shucks. 26 years, maybe I'm getting close to figuring things out. But, God almighty, she may have heard me say that. I'm fucked.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah. Well, see, that's not a bad thing to be on Valentine's Day.
All right. You've been working for one all night long. I don't want your damn bell, Bob.
And on that note, let me let you go.
All right, you take care, Scott. Have a good evening.
Take care, man.
Get to work on those palm fronds. You know, you might make a hat.
I will. I'll weave you a Panama hat.
That would be just lovely. Take care.
And but you got to send a picture of you in the Panama hat.
Oh, I will proudly publish it.
All right.
Later.
See ya.
Bye now. Stay away from the Milky Way coffee. We can't have you up all night anymore. So here we are. We have we've got $35 to go on Charlene's challenge. If that is met, then tomorrow we will be at 571. If it's met. At present, not so much. But hopefully it'll be met by somebody in the overnight crew. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who who spend your precious finite time engaged in this little program, and thanks to those of you who do so much to keep this on the air, these many, many years. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.